Welcome back, friend. This week, we are jumping into the president's recent executive orders regarding TikTok and whether that shit's getting banned. Money and stimulus money, are those second stimulus checks coming? Like, WTF is happening with that? And online censorship. I don't know if you follow what's going on in the world of the YouTubes and the Instagrams, but people are having their videos taken down and they are pissed. So let's get into it.
Hey there, this is Get Legit Law and Shit, and I'm Emily D. Baker, badass lawyer for online business. I've been a licensed attorney for over 15 years, and I'm a former prosecutor. So yeah, I know some shit, and we're going to talk about the legal shit you need to know. But don't worry, this is not another boring business podcast. So let's get started.
Before we jump into talking about the president, I want to remind you, my friend, that I am going to try to keep the conversation, as I always do, to factual and my opinions, and somewhat politically neutral. Some stuff that we're going to talk about, I agree with. Some stuff, I don't. That is generally where I fall on the spectrum most of the time. Some stuff I agree with, some stuff I don't. And my personal feelings aside, I can look at the thing and talk about the thing and the effect of the thing without talking about the person and how I feel about the person. Because again, some things you like, some things you don't. And it's okay to have opinions that fall on any area of the spectrum, but we are going to have a respectful conversation about these executive orders because I do want to have a conversation and I want to hear what you think about them, and that we will be talking about when this episode launches over in the Get Legit Community Facebook group. So let's just jump right in. Is TikTok still a thing anymore? Like, did it get banned? What in the world? We're living in strange times. I think Facebook thinks that TikTok is going to get banned because right as this executive order was coming, they also released Reels, which is like their ripoff of TikTok. Not that TikTok's not a total ripoff of Vine. I mean, and Musical.ly, which was the TikTok predecessor, was a total ripoff of Vine and like murdered Vine and left it to die on the Vine. I just walked into that and I couldn't let it go. So TikTok is a video sharing app, essentially, and you make little quick videos. And the purpose of the platform seems to be to take what people are doing, modify it, redo it, share it. People have these little viral dances. If you've seen anyone like the age of 13 to 40 standing in front of a phone dancing, they're probably trying to learn the Renegade, which is one of the viral TikTok dances. And people try to learn the dances and then recreate them on TikTok. And then it gets shared and reshared. And there's a whole bunch of functionality to TikTok. I had it on my phone briefly, played around with it a little bit, deleted it off my phone when I started diving into the privacy concerns. And I do talk about that in episode 20 of Get Legit because there were substantial privacy concerns then. There have continued to be substantial privacy concerns to the point that the president's like, we're not going to go ahead and do this anymore. We're just not. So as we jump into executive orders, I should just mention just some background. Executive orders are legal directives directly from the president. So if the president has the authority over a subject area to create a law, that can be done by executive orders. Executive orders can also be undone by the president. They can also be undone by Congress and in some cases, the courts. That is a brief primer on WTF as an executive order. Anyway, let's get back to TikTok because TikTok. The executive order doesn't exactly ban TikTok. It just, you know, makes it impossible for TikTok to operate within the United States. So it goes about limiting the ability of companies and individuals within the United States to work with TikTok. And that means run payroll for TikTok, pay TikTok's employees, rent office space to TikTok, have TikTok in their app store, allow TikTok to be supported on their platforms, pay for advertising on TikTok. Pay influencers, I think that this encompasses paying influencers to have sponsored posts on TikTok, which is a thing. There are TikTok influencers. If there's a social media platform, friends, there will be an influencer or a million. But paying influencers is not going to fly under this order. So the order goes into effect September 20th, 2020, which, by the way, this year is going, will be here in 7 seconds. And it really eviscerates the ability for TikTok to operate in the United States. So what is this about? TikTok is owned by ByteDance LTD. It is a Chinese company. They have a US operational wing. But from all the discussion about this, it's very clear that if the Chinese Communist Party, or the CCP, as we will call them for ease of my mouth, to not have to say Chinese Communist Party over and over and over, the CCP, if they want the information gathered by TikTok, could easily procure that. The types of information gathered by TikTok are voice recognition linked to face, linked to location. TikTok goes very deep into linking you by location to others that are using TikTok and really creating a very full profile on its users. And I'm not saying that other social medias don't do this, just so we're clear. In the show notes, with everything I link, I actually have the privacy policy in terms of use, because TikTok very clearly says that they will send this information to their parent company in China. So this information is being exported overseas. Multiple branches of the military have been investigating TikTok. The Senate already unanimously agreed that on all government issued devices, TikTok is banned. There are substantial privacy concerns here. There are some that are arguing that this is just more rhetoric against China. However, we are running into what is going to be a very contentious political year. And what we don't need are any countries interfering. And we have seen, especially from the Cambridge Analytica scandal with Facebook, that one of the ways that foreign nations interfere with US elections is through social media and through bot accounts and fake stories. I don't want to say fake news, but sometimes. But things designed to wag the dog here in the US, rhetoric designed to sway the tide one way or the other. And what I had brought up in the episode where I talked about TikTok was the long-term potential for blackmail and for deep fakes. This is not going to be an episode about deep fakes because I will be here for 2 hours and we don't have that kind of time today. But deep fakes are videos that purport to be a person saying or doing something that were digitally created or overlaid on another person. So you can make it seem like a world leader is doing or saying something down to their voice pattern, and it's not them saying it or doing it. So now deep fake videos can make it seem like things are happening that aren't actually happening. I mean, of course, one of the first and most prevalent uses of deepfakes is in pornography. We're not going to get out of this episode without talking about a whole bunch of penis and vagina stuff. So just hang tight. Deepfakes are used quite heavily in pornography to, you know, make pornos of whoever celebrity you want to make a video of when it's not actually them. This can also be used for things like revenge porn, blackmail, you name it, because how do you say it's not you when it's you on video and it's your face and your voice? And that's part of what is so scary about any data gathering that links your face to your voice. That said, I still have all the devices in my house that I talk to. I talk to my car. Like, I still use these things. I don't use TikTok, but I still use some of these things. So it's not to say that TikTok's the only way that this information is getting out there. It's to say that this is one of the least secure, and it's one of the ways that the government can't shut down, which makes them very, very nervous. So in the White House release on the executive order, they say, quote, TikTok, a video sharing mobile application owned by the Chinese company ByteDance Limited, has reportedly been downloaded over 175 million times in the United States and over 1 billion times globally. TikTok automatically captures vast swaths. Nobody read this out loud. Vast swaths of information from its users, including internet and other network activity information, such as location data, browsing, and search histories. The data collection threatens to allow the Chinese Communist Party to access Americans' personal and proprietary information, potentially allowing China to track the location of federal employees and contractors, build dossiers of personal information for blackmail, and conduct corporate espionage. All of that is true. Like, all of that's true and possible. I think the reason that this executive order is written vague is because there are military operations going on around TikTok that are not public knowledge and that are, I would imagine, classified in various ways. So that information is not going to be released in an executive order. But TikTok wants to fight back. TikTok's like, we're not going to just sit down and take this. I believe TikTok will sue. I've linked a very thorough NPR article about this, which goes into the fact that there is lots of ripple effects to this order, but it also points out the fines for violating this for companies that engage in a transaction with TikTok are $300,000 and then can go up. And transaction in this executive order is not defined yet. It is going to be up to the Commerce Secretary to define what a transaction is for the purpose of this order. So we won't even know until September exactly what constitutes a transaction with TikTok, which is why when I said I think it's going to be everything from hosting it on the platform, running advertisements, paying influencers, it's going to be all of that. But it's also going to be running payroll for them, offering office space to them. It's going to be any interaction, I believe, with TikTok is how this is going to break down. So, of course, TikTok's going to sue. TikTok released a statement linked in the show notes. I'm going to stop saying that. But anytime I reference anything, that's where it'll be. TikTok released a statement saying, quote, "We are shocked." Emphasis is mine. By the recent executive order, which was issued without any due process, the text of the decision makes it plain that there has been a reliance on unnamed, quote, reports, end quote, with no citations. Fears that the app, quote, may be, end quote, used for misinformation campaigns with no substantiation of such fears, and concerns about the collection of data that is industry standard for thousands of mobile apps around the world. TikTok's statement continues, "We want the 100 million Americans who love our platform because it is your home for expression, entertainment, and connection to know. TikTok has never and will never waver in our commitment to you. We prioritize your safety, security, and trust in our community. Always. As TikTok users, creators, partners, and family, you have the right to express your opinions to your elected representatives, including the White House. You have the right to be heard." Okay, TikTok, you prioritize everybody's safety, but you've been sued a bajillion times, exaggeration, but quite a lot, over violations, like flagrant violations of the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. Like, you give no shits about protecting kids on your platform, and there is so much nudity and predatory behavior on your platform. But you care. I hear you, TikTok. You care. Ugh, vomit. Anyway, TikTok cares about not going out of business because TikTok is in talks to be sold to Microsoft. So, of course, they're going to sue and try to protect the value in their company that has to be fire sold at this point in time, because that's really the only option for TikTok, is either to sue and win, which isn't going to happen before September, or to try to get Microsoft to buy. Interestingly enough, Bill Gates referred to this purchase as a poisoned chalice already. So Microsoft wants to buy it, but Microsoft seems, oh, I could digress forever on tech, but Microsoft seems to try too late to do things. Like, Microsoft has stopped innovating, in my opinion, and then tried to like buy Yahoo and then bought Nokia. It's like, oh, we should have a phone. And then they bought Nokia, and then that totally shit the bed. And they're like, oh, we should buy Yahoo. Yeah, who uses Yahoo to search? If you do, can you DM me? Because I need to know who you are. And then tell me if you still have an @AOL.com email address, because nobody uses Yahoo. Who uses Yahoo to search? Ugh. Anyway, Microsoft has really tried too late to evolve into other areas and lost focus on what they do. But I know that Microsoft wants to get into social, and even Facebook is in gaming. So if Microsoft is going to dial down in like the Xbox gaming wing, maybe TikTok will become more of a streaming gaming platform, but then it would kill the platform because the point of the platform is it's Vine, but it's not. But it's Musical.ly, but it's not. So you can't really make it a gaming platform because it's meant for 60-second clips. So, and, you know, Facebook's already shown up on Instagram. Like, oh yeah, we can do that too. Here's Reels. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with TikTok. And for people who are putting all of their effort into being TikTok creators, I'm so sorry. This must be very stressful for you. You know, YouTube still exists. I mean, they might take down your videos, and we'll get to that in a minute. Reels look like they're a whole lot of fun over on the Instagrams. So TikTok is going to sue. TikTok is going to try to get Congress to overturn this, saying that there was no due process and that it's unfair. But Congress has already ousted TikTok from all federal devices. So there is concern. And I think a lot of that concern is valid. Whether procedurally this is the proper way to go about that, I don't know. But it seems that our government has gotten to a point. Hold on, soapbox, let me get it. Okay. It seems that our government has gotten to a point where they no longer trust us to make our own decisions about things. So maybe just informing the people about the TikToks and about the information and then letting the peoples decide for themselves. And yes, if you are an employer or if you are a company, a, you know, branch of the military, government office, local government office, and you give employees devices, you are perfectly well and able to say you can't put TikTok on this shit. You can't have a camera on it. There was a long period of time where you couldn't go into federal courthouses with a cell phone that had a camera. I mean, back in the day when you could still buy a cell phone that didn't have a camera. There were times when you couldn't work in government offices if you had a cell phone with a camera. There are still companies and branches of the federal government where there are areas you can't go into with your phone. It has to be left elsewhere. So there is lots of ways to regulate that. And not allowing TikTok on corporate devices, corporate phones, is one way to start doing that. And maybe just inform the public what you know and let them make informed decisions. Though during COVID, I begin to question the way people make decisions when presented with information. The problem with letting people choose is that the government, as big and amorphous as it is, won't always agree with our choices. And others won't always agree with our choices. So now we're all like in our feelings about each other's choices. And we see this with the mask wearing. We see this with vaccinations. You know, it's choices are hard. And allowing other people to make different choices is hard. But when it comes to TikTok, I feel like if corporate espionage is the one of the issues, and if tracking government officials is another one of the issues, then banning it on devices that can be controlled and informing might be an option. Just saying, let people know they could end up with their 13-year-old daughter as a deep fake in a whole bunch of child pornography. Today's not the episode that we're going to talk about child pornography, but holy shit, we will get there in another episode with the child pornography rings that are being taken down at the moment. There is all kinds of stuff happening in the world right now, but you don't want your kid deep faked. You don't want yourself deep faked. It concerns me, but I feel like maybe informed choice is the way to go with this. The problem is things have gotten so crazy that you don't even know what information you can trust anymore. Here's what I say. Read what the company tells you they collect and see if you're comfortable with that shit. Go from there. That's where we start. And episode 20, if you want to know more about that, let's talk about stimulus funds, shall we? Because money. Money. Isn't that what TikTok's all about too, right? It's just money. It's just money. It's not like TikTok's like, we're here to entertain you. No, you're not. You're here to make fuck tons of cash. And then maybe people will also be entertained. people are getting record deals off of TikTok. I have to stop talking about TikTok, Emily. They don't care. We want to get onto stimulus. Okay. So the president got super annoyed that Congress had not extended provisions of the CARES Act. We have talked about the CARES Act on multiple episodes. There are blog posts. I will link them. We have talked about the CARES Act, but the CARES Act is what extended the additional $600 a week for unemployment benefits through the end of July. Did people think this would be over in July? Like, what were you thinking? No, we knew this wasn't going to be over in July. Anyway, extended unemployment benefits extended to some protections for evictions and for foreclosures, things like that, amongst a whole bunch of other things. But this recent executive orders, and I say executive orders because there's like four main parts, cover some of the things that expired in the CARES Act, because the president seemed annoyed that Capitol Hill come to a standstill on trying to figure out what to do next. Everybody was like, maybe we do this. Maybe we do that. Maybe we extend it. Maybe people go back to work. Maybe they don't. Maybe there's jobs. Maybe there aren't. Maybe they get evicted. Maybe they don't. And it seems like the president just honestly, opinion, got impatient. It seems like he was just like, something has to happen. However, I'm not sure how much we like what happened. So let's talk about what actually happened. Starting with the unemployment benefits, the CARES Act had added $600 per week for 4 months per person until the end of July when it just expired. So this new executive order changes that to a $400 per week per individual boost. But $300 gets paid by the federal government, $100 gets paid by the states. And if the states don't agree or don't have the money to like match that other 25%, add in that $100 to the total $400, then the federal government's like, yeah, we're not going to give you any money at all. So good luck with that. So that's a little bit problematic to me. I think states are really struggling to meet the unemployment demands, and larger populous states more so, because it's unprecedented to have this level of unemployment and sustained unemployment. So if states don't have the funds to meet that other $100 per person, then people don't get the other $300, they just get nothing. I don't know if that's the way we want to go with that. It's a choice, that it sure is. Issue I have with this, other than like the states have to put up or shut up, and that can be very difficult for some of the states, is that it doesn't add into unemployment. It creates like a relief system that now has to be operated. So this adds bureaucracy, but we don't have money at the moment. So could we please just run this along with systems that already exist? Alas. This is a brand new program. It is an assistance program, so it is not part of unemployment. So now it's another program that has to be administered by who? By someone or by some entity. And entities are still dealing with working from home. So are you going to tell state unemployment offices that they have to now administer a new program? Are you fucking kidding me? Is that going to happen? No, that's not going to happen. I don't know if people will ever actually see this money. I have concerns. I don't understand why this just didn't run through unemployment. And if the concern from the White House and the attorneys were just that Congress would be like, no, you can't do that. That's our power and you can't run it through unemployment. But it doesn't make any sense to run it this way. And I feel like common sense would tell you that this has to go back through unemployment. And I don't understand the reason to not put it back through unemployment. I understand the reason to reduce the amount to $400 from $600. I understand trying to incentivize people to go back to work so that there isn't as much potential for people to make more money on unemployment than they made employed. But could we get people the help they need in a logical way? Okay, thanks. Because what the fuck? So there's that. This one's not Emily approved. Emily's not a fan of the way this was rolled out. This is stupid. Here's the other thing about it. I was going to move on and then I was like, but I didn't mention the other thing. The other thing is some of the funds to cover this, because at the end of the day, the question with all of the stimulus is who is paying for this and when? Some of the funds for this are coming from disaster relief funds because we are still in a disaster. This has been declared a disaster, but we're also coming up on what is predicted to be a very, very difficult hurricane season. So maybe we don't take the money that we're going to need for the hurricanes for the unemployment program that looks like it's not going to be easily administered anyway. I'm just saying that seems like a bad idea. Like, I think this is going to go terribly wrong. Let's talk about student loan payment relief. Student loan payment relief was also added, and federally held student loans, not those private ones, just the federal ones, are going to waive your interest until the end of the year. Yay! For everyone who has federally held student loans. Woo! If all of you refinanced your student loans because interest rates dropped so much, then this doesn't help you at all, but hopefully you're at a lower rate because you refinanced. That's what I would have done if I still had student loans. The payroll tax cut is the other provision in this, and the payroll tax cut has left everybody kind of pissed off. It doesn't even matter. This is across party lines. People are annoyed by this because they can't see the point. And when I don't see the point of things, I get annoyed too. So do my kids when I'm like, do this, and they're like, why? I'm like, just do it. And they're like, meh. You got to get buy-in by letting people know the logic behind the thing. So the payroll tax cut defers federal payroll tax from September 1 to December 31st so that the federal payroll taxes aren't withheld from your paycheck, but it's a deferral. So you're still going to owe that later. So then down the road, more is going to come out of your paycheck. But the amount of federal tax that's withheld from any given paycheck is not a substantial amount of money. So it's not going to benefit you a lot, and then it's going to hurt when your paycheck goes down more later. And what I'm seeing across industries is businesses who are still trying to survive are cutting your pay. So people are going through rounds of pay cuts and second rounds of pay cuts, which is holding off layoffs, which is fantastic. But to go through those pay cuts, it's unknown when that pay will rebound. It's known that in January, more money is going to start coming out because now you're going to have these deferred taxes being repaid. And I just don't see the point. It's not going to create jobs. Employers aren't going to be like, oh, great, we get to withhold payroll tax for 3 months and now we're going to hire a few new employees. That's not going to happen. And we know that Americans aren't going to be like, oh, let me save that money. When the first round of stimulus checks went out, sales on iPhones skyrocketed. So we know people aren't putting the money away to buy toilet paper down the road. They're buying iPhones. So, you know, and downloading TikTok because we all just need an escape from reality. I don't judge. I'm just saying, I don't know how this is going to help. I know that this is something the president has wanted to do. He's wanted less taxes coming out of payroll anyway. But I need a point other than you just want to do it because now it feels like a conversation with my child, but I just want to. Right, but it's a deferral. And so down the road in January, people are going to be mad. That said, there is some language in there that leads me to believe that maybe the goal is to just wipe this tax entirely and be like, hey, by the way, we were going to defer it, but now it's just poof, it's erased. Yay. I still don't see how that's going to significantly help anyone. But that's just my thoughts. If you have a different opinion on that, I would love to hear your take because I just don't. I don't understand how this one is actually going to help. Let's get to the one I really like. Let's talk about online censorship. Online censorship running up to an election is a whole new world. Also, because of COVID, a bunch of people on the interwebs are like doctors all of a sudden. So there's all kinds of statements rolling around on the internet, and you're starting to see things like Twitter fact-checking posts, Facebook's fact-checking posts, especially posts that are highly likely to contain information or misinformation regarding politics, wellness, health, COVID, things like that. Though they're also really cracking down on like MLMs and work-from-home claims and essential oils and that kind of thing. Those are getting cracked down on too. The things that are annoying me is what I see on the Instagrams where people are like, what happened to the First Amendment? Let me just read you a post from J.P. Sears, who I very, very much like. I really, really do like J.P. He's a comedian, if you don't know him. Awaken with J.P. He is clever, and I appreciate how clever he is. So let me just read you his post, which says, censored on YouTube. I'm concerned. YouTube has been censoring doctors, banning videos that speak about medicine and health from perspectives that aren't calibrated into the orchestrated mainstream narrative. Last night, they put duct tape over my mouth, banning my most recent video. My concern isn't for me and my videos. My concern is for human freedoms, civil liberties, at the heart of which is freedom of speech. The social media platforms that are the modern day town hall in which speech is conveyed. My love for humanity and human expression is immense. Right now, we have already begun sliding down a very slippery slope where a straitjacket is being fitted and tightened, restricting human expression. I don't know a short, concise, cookie-cutter solution to this, but I do know being silent about being censored is not part of the solution. And I do know that raising awareness about it is part of it. And then he continues on. Here's the thing. Whenever we use the words freedom of speech, we are invoking the First Amendment, because the First Amendment guarantees freedom of expression, and freedom of speech is one of those freedoms. The First Amendment applies to government actors only. The First Amendment does not apply to private companies and private industry. It applies to the government stopping your speech, the government banning a book, the government shutting down a post, a platform, a newspaper, a reporter, whatever it is. It is a government actor. And that can be federal, local, state. You know, it could be your local mayor being like, you can't come here and make a comment. It could be as simple as that, but it is a government doing it. Not a YouTube, not a Facebook, not a private company, not another person telling you to shut the fuck up because they don't want to hear what you have to say. That's not impeding your First Amendment rights. It's rude. You can or cannot comply with them, but it's not impeding your First Amendment right, because your First Amendment right doesn't protect those things. It protects you against the government telling you to shut the fuck up. Hopefully that clarifies that. Now, how this comes back around to a presidential executive order is that under the 1996 Communications Decency Act, there is a section, Section 230. And Section 230 sets up some provisions about when platforms such as Facebook, though back in 1996, it wasn't, it was blogs and websites mostly, and internet service providers, you know, the people who are transporting the information from your house out to the interwebs, it was protecting them against things you said. So if you go on a blog and you read the blog and you are outraged, offended, slandered, defamed, what have you, you can't go sue WordPress and AT&T that runs the, you know, the internet to that the person's house and Facebook where it was reposted. You can't go sue them over the thing that that person said. You can go sue that person for defamation, but you can't go sue or slander or the other things I said, but you can't go sue the internet service provider, the platform, the web host over something that someone posted there. And it was really protecting at that time community forums where people would have discussions in, you know, chat rooms and chat boards and AOL chat rooms and things like that. So people would say or do things, and you can't sue the platform over things people said or did. Now, there is a provision as a part of this, and I'm just going to read you the kind of actionable part of it. So Section C is in Section C, subsection 1, treatment of publisher or speaker, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. that means that the host can't be sued for stuff that a user says, essentially. And all these things, interactive computer service and information content provider, are defined and detailed. So that was treatment of the publisher or speaker. Now, civil liability is subsection 2. No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be held liable, that means like legally responsible, on account of A, any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access or availability of material that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable, whether or not such material is constitutionally protected. Or, subsection B, any action taken to enable or make available to information content providers or others the technical means to restrict access to material described in paragraph 1. So we've got subsection C2A, which is your good faith censorship. There can't be civil liability. And I know section B is like, what? And it is just part of all of this conversation. But we're not going to dive into subsection B very deeply, because it is this subsection A that has most of the weight with regard to civil liability. Subsection B really gets into the third party that would make it easier for content to be blocked, or the snitch who would be like, hey, somebody posted this thing, you should probably take it down. Not really what we're dealing with this executive order. What we're dealing with is the allowing to censor material that's otherwise objectionable with no civil liability. Because generally, if somebody talks a whole bunch of shit on you that is untrue, you can sue them. If somebody censors you improperly, there isn't much that you can do. However, since 1996, these platforms have become so essential to the way that we communicate with one another that when they are allowed to start to censor, where does it stop? And that is part of what this executive order goes to, is when things are improperly censored, allowing there to be transparency and, in some regards, allowing there to be civil lawsuits against the providers. You can see why the providers are not thrilled. But this is not directly in the president's purview. This executive order asks the FCC to alter or clarify Section 230 so that social media companies that alter or editorialize users' speech to escape civil liability are not allowed to continue to do so. That means that there would have to be transparency in when things are censored. You would have to be told in some cases, you would have to understand, and there would be more clear procedure, a way to reach out to Facebook and be like, what are you doing and why was this taken down? You know, oh, it violates community standards. I'm going to need you to go ahead and clarify what community standards we are violating. So it's opening the door to allow people to better understand when things are censored online and why, and when it's inappropriate to potentially sue over it. And it is a step in that direction. Now, this Section 230 has come up before when President Trump. So here's the thing. People think that this is the first time he's gone after Section 230 because this was signed on the heels of him being really mad at Twitter for fact-checking his posts. And people are like, oh, it's a reaction to Twitter. The president actually passed another executive order taking aim at Section 230 back in 2018. And it was an anti-trafficking law. And it was targeted at platforms that allowed for sex trafficking. And sex trafficking should be back in the media more than it is at the moment. That is a show for another time. But the president signed an executive order to allow any platform that promotes or facilitates prostitution or promotes and facilitates sex trafficking to be both civilly and criminally charged. So things like Backpage and where this was happening on Craigslist and other online platforms, it allowed those platforms to be taken down. And a lot of those platforms just took themselves down in 2018. So we're seeing new ways that human trafficking and prostitution are being carried out over the internet because some of these forms disappeared. You know, Craigslist had a personal section. It doesn't anymore. You're going to find things like internet service providers being much more cautious if they're seeing this kind of traffic. So it really is trying to shove human trafficking back into a corner of the internet that is not so broad for all to see. And maybe it's on Wayfair, but that's another conversation about the things that are happening on the internet at the moment. So this has been an ongoing battle over Section 230 and whether companies can be sued for their censorship. The FCC has not done anything with this. You know, I'm enjoying the FCC's sassiness lately. So we will see what comes of this, but there are going to be changes. However, as it stands generally, private companies can do what they're going to do. There are rules, of course, but when it comes to regulating speech on their platform under Section 230, they're allowed to do so, and they're allowed to censor things that they feel are necessary. And it's as broad as defining, you know, what is. I was going to start getting into what is the definition of is, but that's a whole Clinton conversation. And it's just, it's such an example of how lawyers will make words mean different things. But my husband hates that when we argue too. He's like, that's not what I said. I'm like, but it is what you said. You don't want to argue with me. I'm always up for discussion, not up for argument. But what is otherwise objectionable? And how do you define otherwise objectionable? And can Facebook say, well, it's objectionable to us that during a pandemic, people are selling work from home opportunities that we don't agree with? Sure, you could say that. Facebook can say, hey, it's objectionable that, you know, you are saying that there are other treatments for COVID than this, because as a company, we believe in this, or as a company, we financially back one. I'm not saying they do. I'm giving examples. These are hypotheticals. But if they said, oh, well, we back this and we don't back that, so that's objectionable. They can't be sued over that kind of censorship at this point. And perhaps opening that door a little bit is a good thing. But when we open the door, when we really look at free speech, if we really, really want to talk about you should be able to say whatever, that includes shit you don't like. That includes shit everybody doesn't like. It includes hate speech. It includes violent speech. Like when you take what is free speech out to its end, it's not just polite conversation. It is people can say anything. So there has to be boundaries, at least in online forums. I think allowing rampant hate speech and speech inciting violence is horribly destructive. But when you talk about, let's make sure that all speech can be protected, which is the purpose of the First Amendment, these were very interesting discussions in law school to me. Where does speech not get protected? And who decides what is speech that we don't like? I mean, right now, the internet's deciding, and you're seeing the cancel culture go swinging wide when people are getting canceled. It's like, oh, you said this, that is not okay. Oh, you said this 10 years ago, that's not okay. So society is starting to censor itself. And it's so interesting to me that people are screaming about free speech at the same time they're screaming that you can't say this, that, or the other. So people don't really want free speech in my, and when I say people, I mean the broader audience doesn't really want free speech because a lot of people don't want to be challenged on their beliefs, opinions, and ideas and don't want to hear opposing viewpoints, especially when those opposing viewpoints are distasteful, are hateful, go against some of your core beliefs. It's challenging to hear people say, no, what you believe is wrong and I don't agree and I hate that you like that. Like if you came to me and were like, Emily, I hate that you like the Dave Matthews Band, I would have to think on whether we could still be friends. It would hurt me to my core. But we're talking about things much, much, much more serious than that, obviously. So it's interesting when we talk about protecting the right to speech. How far are we willing to go to protect the right to speech? And are we willing to protect all speech, even the speech that we don't like? And that is a societal question as much as that is a legal question. Because at the end of the day, we've got to figure out where censorship on social media stops. But also, should there be some censorship on social media? Should killings be allowed to be shown live on Facebook? Should child pornography be allowed on Facebook? Should conversations about child pornography and child molestation be allowed on Facebook? Should hate groups be allowed on Facebook that organize for the sole purpose of hating other groups? I mean, I'm not talking about sports clubs because it feels like that happens too. No, fuck the Cubs. You know, it's not that. But should hate groups be allowed on Facebook? And what about anti-racist groups that hate racists? Can we allow those? But if we allow those, don't we have to allow racist groups too? And this is where the conversation about speech becomes a very deep and necessarily considered conversation, because if we're protecting speech, all speech should be protected. But societally, we don't like all speech. And I get it because I'm human too. And there is speech that I'm like, you cannot fucking say that. What are you doing? But do people have the right to say it? And at the end of the day, if we want to say, you shouldn't censor on social, people should self-censor, but Facebook shouldn't censor, then it all comes in. So it's going to be very interesting starting the conversations around where these boundaries lie. And the concern with putting up fences around speech and putting up boundaries around speech is that where do the boundaries stop? And that's what concerns me. Because obviously there's speech that's distasteful and that we don't like. But over time, those things can become less extreme and start to change. And those, I picture it as a big round, like, fence, like a big corral. And the corral keeps getting smaller. And the things that are allowed stay inside the circle. And the things that are not allowed are outside the circle. And the circle keeps constricting. And that's my concern. How much do we allow it to constrict? And then one day go, oh, we can't say anything at all. And that scares the crap out of me. So this is not an episode that I end with an answer, because I don't have an answer. I think trying to have the discussion is the most valuable thing that we can do, is have the discussion about what protecting speech in public forms like social media looks like and what it means and how important it is, and how important it is for speech that we like, and how important it is for speech that we don't like across the board. I can't wait to have that conversation with you. Thank you for being with me. And because we're still in the middle of a pandemic, raise a glass, or a Starbucks if you're in your car, or a water bottle if you're on a treadmill. Raise a glass. You know what? If you raise a glass and do the toast with me, will you please take a picture of it and tag me on it on Instagram, because it would make my heart sing, and just be like, I'm raising a glass at the end of Get Legit Law and Shit. Raise a glass. May your Wi-Fi be strong. May your toilet paper be plentiful. May your families be well. And may the odds be ever in your favor. Have a great week, friends. I'll be with you next week. Stay well. Thanks for sticking around for today's episode. For episodes like this and conversations like this, come join us in the Facebook community. The Get Legit community is where we discuss the episodes, where I answer your questions, and we have an opportunity to take a deeper dive in a respectful, conversational environment. The Get Legit community is on Facebook. There's a link down below, or you can go to getlegitlive.com. I'll see you on the inside.